Urlaubsmacher mit Michael Becker.
Island, das Land aus Feuer und Eis, Heimat der größten Gletscher Europas und der aktivsten Vulkane der Welt. Island ist ein Land der Extreme, wo man in einer Minute alle vier Jahreszeiten erleben kann. Die Erdwärme, ein enormer Energielieferant, bestimmt das Lebensgefühl der Bewohner, genauso wie das Tragen vieler Kleidungsschichten. Viele Sagen und Geschichten über Elfen und Naturgeister ranken sich um Island. Heute habe ich zwei Gäste aus Island. Silvia ist Isländerin und hat im Ausland gelebt und sorgt nun dafür, dass Touristen das Land authentisch wie möglich erleben können. Für Inessa ist Island Traumland und Wahlheimat zugleich. Freuen Sie sich auf einen spannenden Deep Dive in den nordischen Inselstaat und ich verspreche Ihnen, Ihr Bild wird sich vielleicht ein wenig verändern. Hier sind die Urlaubsmacher, der Podcast mit außergewöhnlichen Reiseprofis für Reisebegeisterte und Brancheninteressierte. Heute wieder aus der Lufthansa City Center Fides Reisen Lounge in Berlin. Ich bin heute mal in einen anderen Raum gezogen und hoffe, dass das mit der Qualität auch so klappen wird. Unser Gespräch werden wir in Englisch führen und den Artikel dazu auf Deutsch können Sie dann, wenn Sie möchten, auf der Webseite nachlesen und auch eindrucksvolle Bilder sich ansehen. So, welcome Silvia and Inessa. It's a pleasure to have you in the podcast and yeah, welcome to Berlin.
Thank you.
As I told you before, we are starting with the first question about how everyone got into the business, especially also Inessa into the luxury travel business. Let us start with you, Silvia. You are born in Iceland. You are a real Icelander.
Well, yes, I'm born and raised in Iceland and quite interestingly so, I come into travel through my family. So Iceland Travel was founded back in 1936, back when we called travelers explorers rather than tourists. And for almost 100 years now, we've been proudly serving diverse needs of clients. But the interesting thing about this is that my father, he worked for the company which was called Iceland Travel, or then it was governmentally owned, Icelandic Tourist Bureau, it was called, and which is the fourth runner of Iceland Travel. So now I'm here. So it's kind of been going in circles in my family.
That's good. And travel was always a point you were talking about by dinner, and it came up with your childhood.
I was just born and raised in it. Yeah. I never thought it would be, I could make a career out of it, or yeah, it will be something that I will be good at. But it kind of just came quite naturally. Of course, I was really, really fortunate that I traveled a lot as a child. Of course, I learned a lot about my country as well. And I learned a lot from my parents, just how they had been running things. So I would say it's in the blood.
Yeah. Inessa, you fall in love with the island and came to Iceland and you're still there and you won't go away. And you're more in touch with the more luxury side of travel in Iceland. What made it so interesting for you to step into the role of tourism in Iceland?
Well, I'm originally from Russia, and first I traveled to Iceland in 2013, and I always had this, you know, feeling for Nordic regions. I've always been captivated by the landscape, culture, and this unique charm the Nordic countries have. So my journey with Iceland began when I first traveled here, and then I fell in love with the country and I decided to learn the language and to try to become a local. And so I'm here now in the tourism industry. And the first time when I traveled to Iceland, that experience actually changed everything for me. And I knew right away that I want to be part of sharing Icelandic wonders with the rest of the world, although I'm not local, but this is an amazing country to live in and amazing product to sell, because we in tourism industry sort of selling dream vacation to our destination, which is quite amazing. And I started working in Iceland Travel in 2015, and then sort of my focus switched to luxury tours, where we prioritize and the very best of Iceland and the best of what Iceland can offer. And since 2015, I'm in this industry and I think I can call me local at some extent, because I've learned the language and yeah, know Iceland really well.
Was it difficult for you to learn the language? Because when you see the names and also the city names, and for me as a German, I'm quite struggling with it. And what was it when you came to Iceland and learned the language?
Well, it's not the easiest language for sure, but I think to me it was, you know, part of discovering Icelandic culture through the language. I think only through the language you can really understand Icelanders and the culture as a whole. And it's a very beautiful language and really ancient language. And I think it changed really little. I think Ragnhildur probably can tell us about that as well, that it did not go through any changes almost. And there are always some new words. And the words actually are not, you know, taking from English language. Icelanders make up their own words, which is really nice nowadays.
Very true. And we can't forget that Inessa speaks one of the best Icelandic that I've heard. So, you know, she's been doing an amazing job here.
No local influence, so the poor language then, I think.
I think it is, actually. You know, we are probably one of the only Nordic countries that can still read the sagas from the thousands. So we still have quite that. We have an ancient language that hasn't changed that much.
To understand Iceland beyond all these clichés, let's have first a look on the location, size and climatics for our German audience. And Iceland is about the size of Bavaria and Baden-Württemberg, so both south countries. Maybe you know them there as well. And Iceland lies between Greenland and the Faroe Islands and Norway and south of the Arctic Circle. And Silvia, does Iceland have more than winter season? Talking about the season is, or the weather is one of the major things the Iceland people are doing. Is the winter the most famous season for you?
Well, actually, this is a really good topic to start with, because as you say, Icelanders, they cannot stop talking about the weather and how the seasonality changes here in Iceland. But as you were saying, I would say the chilliest thing about Iceland is probably the name. People think that Greenland is green and Iceland is full of ice, but I would say it's exactly the opposite. We are really, really fortunate here in Iceland that we have, of course, the Gulf Stream to think that we have quite temperate climate here year around. So people think it's extremely cold, but it isn't. Even like if we think about just numbers, the average in January is around 2 degrees Celsius or 36 degrees Fahrenheit. So definitely New York is much, much colder than we are. But then again, that also means that during the summertime, it can also be quite chilly. We don't have really warm summers, but it's warm on Iceland. So we are really fortunate. We can see a lot of difference between seasonalities. So there is the beautiful summer season, of course, where we have beautiful green hills, a lot of different colors in the landscape. Of course, the midnight sun, we cannot forget that. I mean, June, July, August, we have between 20 hours a daylight on average. While, of course, then in January, we have around 4 hours of daylight. So we are also a very much a country of contrasts. And then we have the beautiful spring season, where we see everything come to life, birds coming in, changes in the landscape as well. So I would say that probably between March, April, May, would we call springtime in Iceland. And then, of course, we have a beautiful fall season, which can be like late August, September, October, where you might even see northern lights glimpsing in the sky when you can see that there's a little bit more darkness. And there is something magical about every single season.
About the Nordic Lights, when we talked last time, you said you have a schedule on a website to see when the best time of Nordic Lights will appear in the next week or...
The Icelandic Met Office, they have a really good website. And on their website, they have a specific northern light forecast. So it tells us about if there are going to be clear skies, if the clouds are going to be high enough that you will be able to see them. And of course, it depends on the solar system, how everything is going. Will we see northern lights that night or not? So they have like a ranking system between is it likely or not likely? I mean, I would say between 3 and 4, it's very likely that you will see them. So it's always good to check the forecast, but you won't be able to have it until maybe, I would say, 2 days before, maybe? One day before? What do you say, Inessa? Maybe 1 day before?
Yeah, it's really not possible to plan in advance your northern light hunting trip. You always need to check the weather forecast. And usually our guides do that for us. They always keep track of the forecast and make sure that they keep our clients updated on possibilities.
And is it right that, or what I'm sometimes hearing is that you see the northern lights better through the camera than with their direct?
Yeah, actually that is quite true, because the camera catches the light a little bit different, and because of the I don't know even how to explain this, because of the solar system, it can vary in color quite a bit. So you often see quite more colors through your camera lens than with your own eye.
Let us talk, before we are coming to the tours and everything, let us also talk about the geothermic energy. This is one of the I think this is a point that influences also the island and also the people of Iceland. What are the major things when you have these hot springs and all this thermic energy?
I mean, this is a major influence in our life, and I'm quite sure that we would not have Iceland as we have it now unless we would have the geothermal energy, because we have 99% of our heating is geothermal energy. So it's all green energy that we're using mostly for our houses. Of course, we have a really rich swimming culture in Iceland. So the swimming pools are a huge part of our everyday life. I take my 2-year-old probably like 3 times a week swimming, and it's a part of our daily routine. And I think it's one of the best ways for foreigners to understand Icelanders a bit better is to just take a dive, understand where we're coming from. And right now we've been having really, really cold weather in Iceland. So it's been beautiful to come inside. Your home is always warm, and we can be really, really thankful that it's with this green geothermal energy that we have.
So then it's green from sustainability. And
yes,
we were talking about this as well, Inessa, when we are coming to the tours as well. What you are doing and what you are not doing in the luxury business. Inessa, what makes Iceland and also Greenland ideal destination for luxury travel?
Well, I think that these two destinations are still, you know, not that popular, I would say, on the major scale. So there are still some hidden places here in Iceland and, of course, in Greenland, which you still can visit. And in terms of luxury travel, I think it's all about connecting with the landscapes through the experiences that we offer. And in Iceland, we have, I would say, everything on this small island, from modern spas to private lodges to 5-star hotels that come with all inclusions already. Then we have this stunning wild highlands where no roads, you know, no any traces of humanity, basically. And these two destinations are perfect for people who are seeking to have a mix of both of adventure and relaxation, and mix of unexplored natural attractions with some modern luxury spas and 5-star lodges. And in Iceland, there are so many different activities to offer. I think we have activities for every interest, I would say. For example, from the highlands, tours on the super jeeps where you go deep in the middle of Iceland and explore some totally untouched regions, to ice caves and glacier hikes and lava tunnels. So we have lots of things to explore. And of course, Icelandic culture is quite rich, and we have many different festivals, including some music festivals here in Reykjavik, which are quite popular outside of Iceland, and many people come here year after year just to attend those festivals. And of course, Iceland is increasingly becoming a popular destination for photographers because the landscapes are just stunning. And of course, Iceland also attracts people because it's quite a popular filming industry hub, and people want to travel to Iceland to see all this iconic, you know, Games of Thrones sceneries or Interstellar or Star Wars locations.
The major points, the must-have to see. Let us go back to the tours. Tours with the jeeps are not possible all the year around, I learned, because too much ice, or what is the major point also for people who are coming with their own jeeps? What you have to focusing on when is the best time to make a Jeep tour and when is it from the weather or what, from your opinion here, not so good to go on these tours?
Yeah, road conditions in the highlands are quite tricky, and usually the highland roads are not open year-round. They open sometimes from end of May, but sometimes even from mid-June, and are open until mid-August or late August. Yeah, that's because of the melting, you know, snow melting, and the roads are not just suitable for driving. So definitely to visit highlands, the best time is summer, because we get the best weather, the days are long, and people can explore as much as possible. Usually to make these tours even more interesting and, you know, more immersive, we arrange private super jeeps, so our clients can go to the places where there's no one around for, you know, tens of kilometers. And of course, we always make sure that they have some nice gourmet experience in the highlands with picnics and some extra touches.
So you have also overnights in the highlands then with on these tours?
Not in all parts of the highlands. Usually the highlands are like wild places and are unexplored. I would not say unexplored, but untouched more or less. But we actually have one hotel which opened recently in the highlands called Highland Base. So now there is possibility to stay in the highlands, almost in a 5-star hotel with all the amenities and a great restaurant on the premises and the guides available for some hiking tours. So yeah, this area is developing as well, but I don't think that they will, you know, do the same in the all highlands areas. I think it's one of a kind hotel and one of a kind destination within Iceland, and the rest of the highland will remain untouched.
And how big is the tour from guests when you're going with your super jeeps? Can our guests or the Lufthansa City Center guests booked person by person, or is it completely buy out that you have to come with a complete group?
Usually we work with private tours, so it depends on the vehicle size. So we have vehicles with capacity from 1 to 4 people, then from 4 to 6 people, and from 11 to 16. So it's big sprinters. Yeah, it all depends on the party, you know, how many people are traveling together. But usually it's smaller groups with 1 to 4 packs capacity.
Coming back also to the point with the photographing and the star watching or star photographing, Iceland is also one of the major landscapes where you can have no influence by light and see all the stars directly all night, or?
Yes, that's correct. In winter time, in remote regions where the light pollution is minimal, the sky is just magnificent. When it's clear, clouds.
It's very popular to go on these tours. I just talked to a colleague from Gran Canaria, and he said, yeah, they are also doing these tours because the light pollution is always very high. And on these islands, they say you can see also the little stars and make your photographing. And
yeah.
He also guided from guiding tours. They help you to see the right stars.
And that's correct, because the most populated area in Iceland is the capital area, where Reykjavik is. And the rest of the island is, I would say, quite empty if we talk about big towns or big cities. So Reykjavik is the only really big town for, if you're talking about Icelandic scale.
It's really interesting because you were talking about the stargazing, if you can say so, that although Reykjavik is the largest city here in Iceland, it only takes you about 15 minutes to go out of the city where you will not have any light pollution. So that's why it's an excellent destination to get a little bit of everything. You have Reykjavik or the city center here quite close by, but it takes you such a short time to go just a little bit outside of the city and enjoy a little bit of a unspoiled nature. It's really good to be able to do that here. And of course, we can't forget the solar eclipse, which will happen on the 12th of August, 2026. And it's probably going to be one of the biggest solar eclipses that we will see in our lifetime. And so therefore, we will be setting up some tours around that as well.
So then you're going out by tents or to stay outside long time? And
we will not be outside by tents. That, you know, that's the good thing about planning ahead, is that we can secure places where this will be, where you will be able to see them, or hopefully we will be able to see them, which is going to be in the west of Iceland. You there it will be more clearer than in other parts. So, but of course you will be outside probably most of the time when you will be able to hit it. So and you will need special glasses for it and so on. So I think it's gonna be an experience.
A huge event also.
Absolutely.
Accommodation in Iceland is limited because on hotels and everything. How does it affect air transportation? And as I have seen, direct flights since, I think, 20 years to the States. And Iceland was more known as a transfer destination, but now it is a vacation destination for the Americans.
Well, it's always been a transit location. Icelanders started out as a hub between, as you say, between the US and Europe. We were kind of the perfect destination in the middle. It's only about 5 to 6 hours when you go to New York or Boston to Iceland, and then you can go from Iceland to anywhere in Europe within 3 hours, 3.5 hours or so. And that's always been a really big selling point for our airlines, both Icelandair and Play, which are the Icelandic airlines that are selling into Iceland. But then again, Iceland has become more and more popular. So accommodation is getting a little bit tricky during high season, definitely. But the high season is still only, I would say, June, July, August. Has maybe skipped a little bit into May, maybe a little bit into September as well. But you will see so much more happening in the winter time. You will get, of course, a little bit better prices as well. So there's a huge opportunity with other seasonalities.
So, Inessa, what is the best time to make the Golden Circle tour, for an example? Yeah.
Well, the Golden Circle is not really our favorite part of Iceland, especially during high season, because it's really difficult to escape crowds there unless we travel late in evening or really early in morning, which we do sometimes when clients want to experience it without hundreds of people around. But I would definitely recommend to travel to Iceland in the end of September, beginning of October. This is beautiful season, and I think it's underestimated season, because it is the time when the weather is switching from nice summer weather to colder winter weather, but you still get to experience the best of both seasons. And as Silvia mentioned, you can see the Northern Lights even while still having plenty of daylight, still have nice, warm, summerish weather, Icelandic summerish weather. And it's just amazing season to travel. And of course, in spring, from late March until late May. And in terms of accommodation, I would like to add that Iceland is doing an amazing job in terms of improving the quality of accommodation and variety, of course. We have new hotels popping up here and there, not only in the capital region. And speaking about high-end accommodation, although we have just a handful of five-star properties here in Iceland, we also have some amazing properties in the countryside that don't have maybe this five-star stamp on them, but the service level is amazing and they stand up to all the standards.
Great. So one point we missed until now is this food, and what can the guest have when they are going out for dinner, and what is the most popular food for guests in Iceland?
I think Silvia should take this one because it's a super local question.
It is a quite local question, and it's quite interesting that Iceland has never been, it was never popular with like these foodies who always go to different cities to get some unique experiences. But since kind of the new Nordic cuisine started, I would say in the early 2000s, the food scenery in Iceland has changed tremendously. Of course, we are quite well known for products that are, you know, we have fresh lamb, we have, of course, one of the freshest fish that you will ever find. So seafood in general is very, very popular in Iceland. But then again, we have, due to our, you know, natural resources, fresh water, pure nature, geothermal energy. It makes it possible that we can grow, for example, vegetables all year round in greenhouses. So, I mean, one of the biggest destination, I would say both a tourist destination and just a food hub in Iceland, is called Friðheimar, which is a tomato farm. So, which is a beautiful tomato farm about an hour from Reykjavik, where they serve tomato soup and tomato products all year around. So you can sit in the warmth, in like the freezing cold outside, you will get beautiful, freshly made tomato soup every day. And with all of their interesting products, I even went there this summer and they were offering me, I had tomato ice cream and I had a tomato beer. So, you know, and it's a really, really unique experience. But of course, fresh seafood, good locally grown fresh products is definitely something that is on your list when coming to Iceland.
Do you still have also an upcoming craft brewery community?
Oh, absolutely. They're popping up everywhere. And you will see them all around Iceland. It's not only based in Reykjavik. You will see them, for example, in Vík, in the north of Iceland, in the west of Iceland. You can really... We are on top of it right now.
Inessa, are you more on beer or on the gin side? Maybe also there are gin distilleries in Iceland now?
I'm more on the wine side, but Icelandic beer is really good. And also, I think it has to do something with the quality of water, because in Iceland, we can drink tap water, cold water, which is delicious, I would say. Yeah, if you can say that about water, yeah, the quality is amazing. And I think it adds up to the taste of beer that we have here.
And I think just in taste of everything in general, because, you know, when you have fresh products, when you have water as good as you have it in Iceland, it kind of affects everything that you do. We kind of forget that we use water in quite a lot. So, yeah, it definitely has a tremendous effect on the quality of food in Iceland.
One last point that we are coming to an end in a moment. You were talking about film industry, on which Netflix series you can go and look for film productions you had in Iceland, or what is coming up?
There is one recent TV show released on Netflix, the True Detective new season, which is quite big and popular TV show abroad and in Iceland as well. And there are also lots of TV shows from local filming production companies that are also available on Netflix. For example, the newest Katla TV show, which is really good, and I recommend everyone who is interested in Iceland to watch it. And of course, there are some more popular productions like Game of Thrones, Interstellar, the Star Wars, and more of bigger projects that choose Iceland as a backdrop for because of its untouched and accessible environment. And yeah, I think Iceland is blooming now in terms of filming industry, and it's getting more and more popular.
So we can give this advice, watch out on different platforms for productions directly from Iceland, and maybe you can switch on the language and then you can have the first hearing out the language before you visit Iceland. And I heard from many people that they learned from watching TV, learning the language a little bit, and then go on. Yeah, before we are coming to the end, and my question at the end is, where's your next trip going to? And I heard that you just came back from London. And what will be the next one?
Yeah, I just came back from the WTM in London in November. And I actually think that my next trip will probably be to Berlin in March. I haven't gotten anything scheduled before that. I will probably travel a bit in Iceland, though, because I always love traveling in the wintertime in Iceland, see family and friends. Of course, we're coming up to the holiday season as well. But I think my next trip abroad will be to Berlin, and I will probably meet you up there.
We will meet there, yeah, at the boot, yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
And Inessa, what's your next favorite trip?
Well, my next trip, which is actually work-related, is upcoming this Sunday. I'm heading to ILTM Cannes trade show.
Yeah.
Which I'm really looking forward to. It's always a great time to reconnect with friends in the industry. But if talking about my personal plans, which is not set in stone yet, but I'm really eager to tick it off my wish list, I really want to go to Azores Island. I hope I pronounce it correctly, in the Portugal. I think both Iceland and this place have so much in common. Both are volcanic islands. and I really want to visit that.
Before we say goodbye, I will just switch back to our audience. Ja, liebe Zuhörerinnen und Zuhörer, wenn Ihnen unsere heutige Ausgabe wieder gefallen hat, dann empfehlen Sie uns weiter und wir würden uns freuen, wenn Sie dabei bleiben und wenn Sie zum Beispiel unsere Podcast-Serie, die Urlaubsmacher, noch nicht in Ihrer Liste haben, dann abonnieren Sie auch die Urlaubsmacher. Wenn Sie natürlich auch gerne nach Island jetzt fahren möchten, wenden Sie sich an die Kolleginnen und Kollegen von Fides Reisen Lufthansa City Center und dann können Sie entweder dort Urlaub machen oder einen etwas längeren Zwischenstopp vielleicht auf dem Weg nach Nordamerika. In diesem Sinne, vielen Dank, dass Sie alle dabei waren und der nächste Podcast kommt ganz bestimmt. Und ja, Silvia and Inessa, thank you very much for joining me on the Urlaubsmacher Podcast. And we will meet in Berlin and I will be not going to Cannes, but there are a lot of colleagues from me as well going there. So I know that it is a good place to network and yeah, wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us. It was really a nice experience.
Die Urlaubsmacher mit Michael Becker.